Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the May NJEDA board meeting. At this time, all phone participants are in a listen-only mode. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public attending by phone will be advised to press one, then zero on your telephone keypad to be placed in a queue to speak and provide comment. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the one zero command. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star, then zero. I would now like to turn the conference over to Chairman Kevin Quinn. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Tim, if you could read the open public meeting notice.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice of this meeting has been sent to the Star-Ledger and the Times of Trenton at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and the meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Tim. Manira, let's do a roll call.
Yes. Chairman Kevin Quinn.
Present.
Vice Chairman Charles Sarlow.
Here.
Virginia Bauer.
Here.
Fred Dumont.
Here.
Aisha Glover.
Present.
Rosemarie Hicks.
Present.
Marcia Marley.
Present.
Noreen Giblin from the Governor's Office.
Present.
Banking Commissioner Marlene Caridi.
Present.
Aaron Binder for State Treasurer Elizabeth Moyo.
Present.
Roberto Sabarenas for Labor Commissioner Angelo.
Present.
Elizabeth Dragon for DEP Commissioner Sean Lazarette.
Here.
Phil LaLagia. And Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Great. Thank you, Manera. We have one set of meeting minutes for approval today. And given that just about everybody is participating virtually, if you're making a motion or seconding an item, please share your last name. Before you are the minutes from the April 13th EDA board meeting for review and approval, can I get a motion to approve the April 13th board meeting minutes?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Noreen Giblin, second.
Thank you, Noreen. All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let me go to the chairman's remarks. Today it feels like the marketing associated with Jaws 2, just when you thought it was safe to go back into the water. We have six people in the boardroom, and for those who are familiar with the boardroom at the EDA, it is cold here. Last month, Atlantic City hosted IPF, the leading international offshore wind conference. This showcased the state's role as a leader in offshore wind. Over 3,000 people participated in the three-day conference, attending various events, tours, and panels. I happened to spend 2.5 days there. We had a nice EDA presence. It is very exciting to have a better understanding of the economic opportunity and workforce development opportunities associated with this enormous emerging industry here in New Jersey. The EDA has invested hundreds of millions of dollars in small businesses. As part of National Small Business Week, we were honored to highlight several EDA-supported small businesses across the state and announce plans to expand the Main Street Recovery Program. Since October, nearly $5.5 million in grants and lease assistance has been awarded to more than 230 small New Jersey businesses. Next month, we'll launch the $20 million Main Street Micro Business Loan Program to further support businesses as they recover from the pandemic. Now, the EDA is widely known for its financing solutions for businesses of all kinds. but it also offers creative approaches to connecting and connecting growing businesses with precious capital. I look forward to attending the New Jersey Founders and Funders event coming up on June 1st to experience firsthand the EDA's efforts to connect young, innovative companies with investors focused on nurturing the state's technology and life sciences sector. The event connects entrepreneurs and investors in a speed dating format and will be held in person at NJIT. Just for the record, it will be the only speed dating I'll be involved with. For the first time since the program launched in 2014, we will host a virtual prep session on May 16th to help participating entrepreneurs hone their pitches. These are just a few examples of how the EDA is supporting businesses in New Jersey and working to grow the economy. That is it for my remarks, Tim. CEO's report.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And as the chairman said, sort of addressing an empty auditorium here, it feels a bit odd. But it's what it is, and it's the appropriate, I think, public health thing to do to anyone who needs to take the precaution of being on the phone. So good to be with everyone. It's been a busy month since we were last together in person in this room. A bit of a whirlwind, in fact. I had the privilege of joining the governor and Choose New Jersey and a delegation on an economic mission to Ireland for 3 or 4 days. A couple of the highlights were the announcement that Applegreen is going to locate its U.S. headquarters, North American headquarters, in Glenrock. It's 100 headquarters jobs and about 800 new jobs at that company across the state over the next several years. I also had the chance to visit a really extraordinary maternal and infant health research center that is a potential model or learning example for the center that we've been working under the leadership of First Lady Tammy Murphy and her Nurture NJ initiative to build here in Trenton, and actually signed a partnership agreement or a memorandum of understanding to partner and collaborate and share best practices. If you recall, this board had approved some items of support for that in back at the February meeting. So work continues there. As the chairman mentioned, IPF down in Atlantic City was an extraordinary moment of significance for the wind industry and for New Jersey's wind industry. I'll tell you that sort of qualitatively, the energy in the room and at the conference was incredibly positive. Pardon the pun about energy. The spirit of the meeting was incredibly positive. I think New Jersey and Governor Murphy's leadership was recognized as head of the pack around what states are doing to be supportive of this industry. We were able to make a really important announcement that Ørsted is going to be the first tenant at the Windport. When Ocean Wind 1 was originally announced 2+ years ago, that project was originally going to be marshaled out of Virginia, and because we didn't have a Windport, we didn't have someplace to marshal it out of. And so that's going to be 200-plus new jobs just from that project alone. At the Windport, the first of what we hope will be many tenanting announcements there. I happened to be at the Windport last week with some of our colleagues doing a visit with one of the potential tenants. I can tell you, it's coming along really well. For those of you who haven't been down there in a while, or if you've been there when it looked like a bunch of dunes next to the river and next to the nuclear power plant, it's starting to look like a real site. The women and men of the South Jersey building trades and our contractors are doing an incredible job turning that from nothing into something extraordinary, and so really proud of the progress there. I'm also thrilled that we're making progress, and I'll shut up in a minute so we can get to making the progress that Tara and Emily will talk about around childcare, the childcare grants that are going to be brought forward today. You know, if 2020 and 2021 didn't underscore and sort of smack us all in the face with the importance from an economic infrastructure perspective of childcare, and I know I experienced that personally, I know many of us on the call did as well. I don't know what will, and so as part of a package that the legislature passed last year, as part of the budget the governor signed, EDA has been given the privilege of overseeing some funds to support child care facility improvements, and Tara and Emily will talk about that in a moment, but when we think about broadening who we help, how we help, and what we think of as economic development and economic secure and economic infrastructure, hard to think of a better example than this child care program that we'll talk about in a few minutes. So a lot going on. One last note before I yield the floor back. I'd be remiss if I didn't note, and I'll do this again next week at the FEMIRA board meeting, but FEMIRA's longtime, the only executive director in the history of the Fort Monmouth Economic Revitalization Authority, Bruce Stedman, had let me know earlier this year that he was planning to retire and move on to his next chapter around this time this year. I just want to thank and recognize Bruce for his extraordinary leadership. You know, when the federal government, when the Pentagon, through a BRAC process, chooses to shut down a military installation, particularly one as significant and sizable as Fort Monmouth, it's one of the worst things that can happen to a community in terms of the just overnight massive economic impact that it has, and the work that Bruce and the team at FEMIRA and the board at FEMIRA, with the support of this board and the team at the EDA, has done is nothing short of extraordinary. We're in a really good position to complete the mission there to redevelop that entire site this decade. The good news is, as good leaders do, Bruce had made sure there was a good succession plan in place, and Kara Kopak, the Fort Monmouth board approved her as the new executive director earlier this spring. So great leadership waiting in the wings to take over from Bruce, but I'd be remiss if I didn't thank Bruce and recognize him. I'll read a couple snippets. At the FEMIRA board meeting next week, I'll present a nice letter from the governor to Bruce. I'll just read a couple snippets here, and I think Bruce wanted to say a word or two. Dear Bruce, it's my honor to congratulate you on your retirement from your remarkable career with the New Jersey EDA as the executive director of the Fort Monmouth Economic Revitalization Authority. Your skillful and decisive leadership of FEMIRA has seen the masterful planning for the future of Fort Monmouth. Now, as you embark upon this new exciting chapter in your life, take pride in knowing that you've made a tremendous impact on your fellow New Jerseyans. You've shown that you are the embodiment of a true public servant and a champion of smart growth and pragmatic community-oriented development. Please know that Tammy and I offer a sincere thank you for your indispensable work. My very best, Philip D. Murphy, Governor of the State of New Jersey. So Bruce will be deeply missed, his leadership at the fort and on that project, on that set of projects, has been, again, nothing short of extraordinary. So, Bruce, I know you wanted to take a moment and address the board, but please do so with my sincere thanks and appreciation for all your service.
Thanks, Tim. Presuming you can hear me okay?
Yep, go for it.
I'll make it quick. The opportunity to work with EDA and the FEMIRA team has been the most challenging and rewarding part of my 40-some year working career. And I don't have enough words to note my appreciation and thanks for the opportunity and the support we've gotten from you, Tim, and the EDA leadership and the EDA board, as well as all the FEMIRA staff and board and the governor's office, et cetera, has been just outstanding, especially in the last 5-6 years. We've really been able to turn the corner and look towards, completing the mission, which 11 years ago was really just a dream. So not to belabor it, but thank you. It's been awesome. And I'm so proud that the foundation is in place to have an outstanding future and continued excellence at FEMIRA. And everywhere I go, I'm going to be proud to be able to say I was a member of the EDA team and what we did at Fort Monmouth has been awesome. So thanks a lot, and God bless all of you. Have an awesome day. Thank you.
Thank you, Bruce. All right, let's ready.
Over to you, Mr. Chairman.
So our agenda begins with a couple of measures considered by this month's policy committee: the Child Care Facilities Improvement Pilot Program Phase 1, and the CSIT Maternal and Infant Health R&D Grant Program, both of which seek to improve the level of care of mothers and children that they receive in New Jersey. The committee was also briefed on several administrative matters, including updates to delegations of authority, extension of the MOU between the authority and the NJ Commission on Science, Innovation, and Technology, a contract award for small business bonding readiness, an adjustment to the New Jersey Zero Emission Incentive Pilot Program, and finally, an amendment to the contract with the Coalition for Green Capital for consulting services. So let's move to the first item on our agenda, Child Care Facilities Improvement Pilot Program Phase 1. Tara Colton, Executive Vice President, Economic Security, and Emily Apple, Program Manager, Economic Security, presenting. Tara and Emily.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Tim. We're thrilled to be presenting to you today for approval of the Child Care Facilities Improvement Pilot Program. I want to start by offering huge thanks to so many people at EDA who have helped develop this program, especially Bruce Ciella, Kim Ehrlich, Lorena Garcia, Christina Fuentes, Pat Rose, and the extraordinary Emily Apple, who will be walking you through some specifics in a minute. Just as context, what we're bringing to you today is an important component in Governor Murphy's commitment to a whole-of-government approach to strengthening New Jersey's child care sector with a laser focus on equity. And it's the result of a collaborative process with our sister agencies, especially Department of Human Services and Department of Children and Families, the Governor's Office, and countless folks here at EDA. As Tim referenced, and as a working parent myself, the vital role of child care to our economy has never been more clear. As a reminder, last year, EDA issued a request for information to learn more about and identify, in essence, what our lane could be. Where could we, EDA, add the most value to support child care? And it became clear that there's a longstanding, significant issue related to child care facilities, because child care providers typically, even before COVID, have razor-thin profit margins, and they're largely unable to pay for improvements in their facilities that are desperately needed. So as we dug a little deeper, we heard from providers about leaking roofs, about windows that wouldn't open, no natural light, no access to the outdoors. And then even if they did go outdoors, there were damaged sidewalks or unsafe parking lots or rotting wood on playgrounds. And we heard about the impact this has in early childhood, where the physical environment is considered the quote-unquote third teacher after the family and the classroom teachers. These facility issues are particularly acute in communities serving large numbers of low-income children, as those providers are often in older or repurposed buildings. And again, they don't have the capital or profit margin to address these issues, some of which have been around for years or even decades. We know there are thousands of child care providers in New Jersey, and while they are technically small businesses, they often don't consider themselves businesses because they got into this field because they love caring for children, but they may not know where or how to begin. One important point I wanted to make is that providers who serve low-income children whose tuition is supported through a federally funded subsidy, since Governor Murphy took office, our administration has increased the tuition rates for children served through that system, especially for providers who receive higher ratings on what's called the Grow NJ Kids quality rating system. So the higher you score, the more money you make. But for many providers, especially those that are in under-resourced communities, facility conditions preclude them from getting that higher rating and then that increased revenue. So it's basically a catch-22, and we are laser-focused on fixing it. So last year, as Tim said, Governor Murphy and the legislature approved the Child Care Revitalization Act, which, among other things, appropriated $50 million to EDA to make grants to child care providers to address these exact issues. This program is primarily funded by the Federal American Rescue Plan, and it's directly aligned with the goals of that funding, short-term catalytic money that's going to have lasting impacts. What we are presenting to you today is to establish that program. Emily will walk you through the details, but there's a handful of policy and programmatic elements I just wanted to emphasize, again, with the governor's commitment to a stronger, fairer, more equitable New Jersey at the core. So in essence, just some high-level points. The program is really intentional around targeting resources to communities of greater need due to historic disinvestment. So it includes a 40% set-aside for child care providers that are located in Opportunity Zone-eligible census tracts. And in order to be eligible, providers have to serve low-income children who are receiving child care assistance subsidies. That's generally for families earning 200% of the poverty level or below. We are requiring providers to commit that the improvements they make will not supplant or replace infant and toddler spaces for children ages 0 to 3 because those are such vital, precious resources. We are requiring grantees to participate in the Grow NJ Kids quality rating system if they aren't already, and that'll help continue to raise the bar on the quality of child care for all New Jersey children. And then lastly, all contractors doing work under this program must be registered New Jersey Public Works contractors with the New Jersey Department of Labor, and all projects have to comply with New Jersey prevailing wage requirements and state affirmative action requirements. Again, I'm going to turn it over to Emily, who will walk through some of the details, and then happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Tara, and good morning to members of the board. Today, you are being asked to approve the use of $10 million in funding through the American Rescue Plan's Coronavirus State and Local Fiscal Recovery Funds, with delegated authority to the CEO to use up to $20 million if the program is oversubscribed, alongside an MOU to accept $4.45 million in state funding from the New Jersey Department of Human Services for the first phase of the Child Care Facility Improvements Program. as well as delegated authority to approve and decline applications in line with the authority's new delegations policy. The first phase is a pilot program with a subset of the $54.5 million that we've been allocated by the legislature through the Child Care Revitalization Fund that will help us learn as we work with the child care sector, and we anticipate coming to the board with future phases of this program as this work continues to evolve. The program will provide grants for project costs between $50,000 and $200,000 to child care providers licensed by the New Jersey Department of Children and Families to make improvements to their child care facility. Up to 20% of the grant can be used for soft costs associated with the facility's improvements, such as permitting fees, shipping and delivery, and environmental assessments, as well as flexibility to receive up to 15% on top of their project costs for unanticipated demonstrated cost overruns. These grants, importantly, are intended to fund the full cost of the facility's improvement and do not need to be repaid. The facility improvements themselves could range from installing a bathroom directly off a classroom so a teacher doesn't have to bring their whole class down the hall when one child needs to use the bathroom, installing new playground equipment, or replacing windows to increase the energy efficiency of the center and save money on their energy bills in the long run. The full and extensive list of eligible uses is included in the board memo in front of you. These facility improvements will not only provide a healthier, more enriching environment for the children they care for, but can also support the long-run business needs by either reducing energy costs, raising their quality rating, and yielding greater reimbursement through New Jersey's Child Care Subsidy Program. Child care providers must use a New Jersey Public Works contractor registered with the New Jersey Department of Labor and Workforce Development, which must adhere to all state prevailing wage and affirmative action requirements. Applicants must be in good standing with our sister agencies, including taxation, labor, DEP, Department of Human Services, and Department of Children and Families. As Tara mentioned, applicants must currently enroll or have enrolled in the past year at least one child receiving child care assistance through the Department of Human Services, ensuring a focus on low-income children and families, as well as committing to enroll in DHS's quality rating system, GrowNJ Kids, within 1 year, as well as committing to staying licensed to provide child care at the location where the facility improvement takes place for 4 years. Staff will review alignment with the eligible uses outlined in the board memo, and the third-party firm will evaluate the cost reasonableness of each project proposed. Applications will be reviewed in the order they're received, but any approval of funding will be based on the authority completing its review and verifying that all of the necessary information has been received and that the applicant and the project meet all of our eligibility criteria. 40% of funds will be set aside for awards for child care providers in Opportunity Zone eligible census tracts to ensure that we're focusing on providers in the lowest communities. After approval, EDA will disperse payments incrementally directly to the contractor upon receipt of invoices from the contractor that are also signed off on by the child care providers. No payments will be issued until EDA has verified that the contractor has complied with all the state's prevailing wage and affirmative action requirements, as well as the requirements of the program. With that, happy to pause and take any questions if members of the board have them.
Do we have any questions for Tara and Emily?
Go ahead.
Okay. Chair, this is Charles Sarlo, and I apologize. I probably should have picked this up during our policy committee discussion, but two questions with regard to the space. So I see that it's basically a four-year commitment to stay in the space, whether it's leased or owned by the applicant receiving this grant. So I'm assuming the lease would have to be for at least 4 years from the time they signed the grant agreement. And then number two is if they own it, I think consideration should be given to putting a deed restriction on the property that they're subject to this grant agreement and that it cannot be sold for a period of 4 years to add additional protection to the program.
Yeah, hi, this is Tara. I can speak to at least some of that. The And it's a great question. Thank you. So we've been looking at how to use similar approaches to what's been done in, for instance, the Main Street Small Business Improvement Grant Program, as well as what other models have been done by other states, including California, which is putting a significant amount of resources into a very similar program. We'll need to check into the question of the deed restriction. I don't just know that off the top of my head. But in terms of the lease, we recognize that many childcare providers would not have a four-year lease. That is, you know, not a common practice. And so what we have aligned it with is every year, at least once a year, a childcare provider has to get relicensed by the Department of Children and Families. And having obviously an active lease and still being in that location would be a condition of that approval. So that's a mechanism that we'll have in place to be able to monitor that. We can look into more details on the deed restriction and circle back on that.
Okay. And then is there a clawback if they don't stay in the space for 4 years?
Yeah, so again, looking at some of the other models that have been done, we have the ability to do either a clawback or sort of put conditions on the grant that was provided, but we also, recognizing the nature of childcare and the disruptions that the sector often experiences, we've also put language in the program specs that essentially allow for us to review extenuating circumstances. Again, this is based on a similar model that's been launched by the state of California, where, for instance, if we had launched this program 3 years ago and then COVID hit and a child care provider had to close for circumstances beyond their control, we may be able to have some discretion. But certainly we're putting in conditions that would allow for these kinds of improvements to last for a long time.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Hi, this is Rosemary. I have a couple questions. One is, you had indicated that the 40% funds were set aside for Opportunity Zone child care facilities. So, and then the other caveat was, I guess they have to be on, I don't want to call it public assistance, but is it SNAP or I'm not sure, even sure the names of those programs. Are we going to validate that number every year as well when we go back to validate or they have to recertify?
Sure. So the eligibility criteria is that for any provider to apply for this, to be eligible for this program, regardless of whether they're in an opportunity zone or not, they have to, at the time of application, have currently serve or in the prior 12 months, have served at least one child receiving the federal child care assistance subsidy. That's the public benefit that we're focused on. That's something that is validated and checked through the Department of Human Services because they administer that benefit. So that is that was part of our sort of programmatic and policy goal, that would be something that we could monitor at time of application.
So why is that number so low, one child? And if it's just one child at time of application?
In part because the threshold for eligibility for the subsidy program is 200% of poverty level, and so there are many children who would be largely considered low income who may be slightly above that number but are not appreciably above that number. We also recognize that there's been so many disruptions in enrollment, and as providers are starting to bring back fuller complements of children, they may have had changes in their class composition, but we also didn't want to establish something that wouldn't be sustainable. And so part of what we're trying to do in this first phase is get funding out the door for providers that may be ready to receive it and have more resources at the outset. As we look towards subsequent phases, as Emily talked about, we may and potentially fairly likely would put some additional considerations into a larger share of children receiving a subsidy or other sort of policy overlays related to equity. That's just something that we had to make some programmatic and administrative decisions around the nature of eligibility. For most providers that serve subsidy children, it's fairly uncommon that they would just serve one. But part of the reason we wanted to also facilitate that is we wanted to provide resources to child care providers that may have a mix of children that are in their facility so that who benefits from the facilities improvement, is broad and affects a lot of children. So we were trying to balance a number of competing priorities all at once.
I think that number is too low, personally. My other question is, if I understand, as I read through it, NJEDA is administering the program and you're partnering with the other agency, correct? But we are administering? Or is it?
Correct.
Okay, all right.
Yes, correct. Sure. It's all administered by our agency. Our sister agencies will be doing data sharing, data checks, looking at, confirming licensure, et cetera. But it's an EDA program.
Okay. The other question is regarding home-based child care. Maybe I missed it, but are they included or excluded?
Yeah, great question. Sorry, we didn't clarify that. So the funding that we have, the $50 million total, is to provide facility improvement grants for centers and what are called group family child care homes. In this first phase of the program, it will only be to centers who have to serve six children or more. Subsequent phases can and will include family child care homes. Part of the reason we're doing it in a phased approach is to make sure that we have a lot of the sort of program parameters in place because this is very new terrain for EDA. We're leaning very heavily on our colleagues who have administered the Hurricane Sandy programs. And the licensure and registration process for home-based providers is different, but we absolutely are planning and kind of once this get launches are going to turn in earnest to look into what the next phase would be like. And that's where you'd have the home-based providers who are serving five children or fewer.
Okay.
I only just add a note to that. Tara's vastly more polite than I am. We haven't figured out how to do physical improvements in people's homes in a way that we're confident is not, you put a new bathroom in somebody's house for a child care center, and the child care center's not there in 2 years, you've given someone a new bathroom. And so there's fraud and waste monitoring we haven't quite cracked the code on yet, and so we're doing this in phases.
But actually, Tim, that sort of leads into my next question as it relates to the improvements. And I think broadly it's hitting all of the right points or spots. But my concern, and I know I've expressed it a couple of times to several different people, or challenge with some of these things like improvements, is that we're spending an awful lot of money in improvements, and we're improving because I would say the vast majority of the folks that you're going to touch, especially in that 40% opportunity zone, may be folks that are leasing. I mean, they're serving that community that you're talking about, that group of folks that you're talking about, but they don't own those buildings. So we're improving, spending $50,000 to $200,000 per facility to improve a landlord's building opposed to standing up a program that would allow those same people that may have been leasing for X number of years to purchase and then improve something that they own, which becomes more sustainable. So the program to improve, we're saying that the landlord doesn't get it directly, but indirectly we're adding the bathroom that's going to improve that building. So the next time somebody comes in or that business fails, we paid for an improvement to the owner of the building and not necessarily to the benefit of what's needed for those folks that are doing the hard work or the heavy lifting of child care.
A couple things. Let me say that there. One, the bathroom question is going to have a toilet that's a foot off the floor, not one that anyone can use. So these are children's bathrooms, so they're pretty user specific. The big benefit for among the big benefits, in addition to the benefits for the kids who get a better facility to go to, is for the business owner, as Tara mentioned, the federal reimbursement goes up dramatically, and so the vastly more sustainable business model for facilities that have the right types of facilities. So I think that's where a huge benefit. Your point on ownership and lease, right, we've had a lot of conversation about that, and we expect to be coming back to the board, looking at Christina, sometime in the next couple of months with a lease-to-own support program through the Main Street program. But we have not, that's another one we haven't cracked the code on yet, but I think the child care question is somewhat, it's related but different than the kind of lease-to-own question, which I agree is a complicated, and it's an important question.
I agree, Tim, that it is a separate, and the output of this is providing children with a better facility. But I guess bigger picture and long term, I just, you know, we possibly we're it feels so siloed, and I think that at some point, big picture and then the silo, but I just think that we're siloing up instead of looking big picture down. But I get what we're trying to go. I understand it. I support that part of it. But just more consideration when we get to phase two. Thank you.
Good thought. Thank you, Rosemary. Appreciate it.
Other questions for Tara and Emily? If we have no more questions for Tara and Emily, can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, all second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? There's no discussion. All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item on the agenda, dedication of economic recovery funds towards CSIT maternal and infant health R&D grant program. Emily Apple, program manager, presenting. Emily.
Good morning. Members of the board are being asked to approve the use of $250,000 in economic recovery funds for grants through the new maternal and infant health R&D grant program, which is scheduled to be approved by the Board of the Commission on Science, Innovation, and Technology this Friday, May 13th, as well as an MOU to transfer these funds to CSIT. This program is part of the authority's continued efforts as part of the First Ladies Nurture New Jersey initiative, which aims to make New Jersey the safest, most equitable place to deliver a baby. In March, the board approved two critical items to advance the development of the Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Center that Tim mentioned in his opening remarks. This MOU with CSIT represents another step in supporting the innovation economy with a specific focus on ameliorating racial disparities in maternal and infant health outcomes, a field that's woefully underinvested in. The goal of the program is to help New Jersey-based early-stage innovation companies accelerate the research and development of technologies to transform new discoveries from research into commercially viable products and services, with a specific focus on three of EDA's strategic sectors, which includes life sciences, technology, food and beverage, with all with an overlay of maternal and infant health. CSIT will combine $500,000 of its own funding with EDA's $250,000 to make 10 awards of $75,000 each. The board members are not being asked to approve the specifications of this program. Those will be considered by CSIT's boards, but rather the use of economic recovery funds for this program in tandem with CSIT's funding. With that, I'm happy to take any additional questions the board members may have.
Questions for Emily? If we have no questions for Emily, can I get a motion to approve?
So moved.
Noreen. Can I get a second?
3 seconds.
Thank you, Marlene. 3 seconds. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Next item on the agenda, recommendations for award, Small Business Bonding Readiness Assistance Program. Christina Fuentes, Managing Director, Community Development and Small Business Services, presenting. Christina.
Yeah.
Our first one at the podium today, folks. All right.
So this action item is seeking the members' approval to award two new contracts to entities that will provide services for and administer the Small Business Bonding Readiness Program. EDA will be awarding two contracts this time since there was an increase in funding through the budget appropriation, and this will ensure more businesses can be served. On February 4th, 2022, the authority issued a request for proposals to solicit service proposals from qualified nonprofit business advocacy membership associations with demonstrated prior experience in contracting with other governmental or public entities to administer surety bonding support services under the program. In response to this solicitation, three proposals were received by the stated deadline. However, one proposal was determined non-responsive for failing to provide the mandatory signature and therefore was not considered for the committee for scoring. So based on the review of proposals by NJEDA staff members, the recommendation is to make an award to the African American Chamber of Commerce of New Jersey and the statewide Hispanic Chamber of Commerce of New Jersey. These two entities will each receive contracts for up to $250,000, and each contract will be for the term of 2 years with two one-year extensions available as well. Each entity will be responsible for providing a free program to small business owners, and each program will provide the technical assistance needed to prepare and obtain surety bonds, which will allow small businesses to compete for state and federal contracts to support their operations and longevity of their business. Thanks for your time. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Christina. Do we have any questions for Christina?
Ms. Rosemary, I have one question. The $250,000, is that per year? Or is that total?
Well, it's total, but we have the ability to take in, if there's additional budget appropriations, it can funnel into. So this is essentially the $250,000 is over the term of the contract, highly likely to get additional funding that can support additional years as well.
Okay.
So I was just going to say that each contract is mandatory that they have to graduate at least 60 participants each year from each awardee as well, too.
Okay. And my other question is, why was it just the RFP limited to nonprofits?
Because that's what the actual language calls for. It has to go to these very specific entities.
What was that? It had to do what?
The budget language that provides this appropriation, both precedent ones and the proposed ones, requires to be a nonprofit.
Gotcha. And the last question is regarding the surety bond. If I'm not mistaken, because I think that, by the way, this is an excellent program, and I'm really glad that it's being expanded. I had the opportunity to sit in on a class, and I was very impressed with just the whole structure of the program, the contractor that was running it, et cetera. So I think it's a wonderful program. I'm glad that it's being extended. The surety bond, the last go-around, did NJEDA underwrite the surety for the graduates as part of the program?
What Joanne does, who's the current subtractor that you're talking about right now, she's actually connected to entities that do provide that. So what she does is she provides the graduates a connection at the end because she's geared them up for the actual bonding to be able to obtain that. So those partners come at the end towards once they've gone through the whole program, essentially, of 8 weeks of training, and then that's how she gets them connected to be able to do the bonding. But we don't, you know, participate in any of the underwriting regarding any surety bonding.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.
Other questions for Christina? If we have no more questions for Christina, can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Second, Marcia.
Thank you, Marcia. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item on the agenda, delegations of authority relating to credit delegations for loan and grant programs, post-closing portfolio management, bond financing, non-discretionary declinations for NJ Accelerate and NJ Ignite, and non-discretionary declinations for pilot programs. Chris Baker, Chief Legal and Administrative Affairs Officer, presenting. Chris.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman and Board members. I'm happy to present the third installment in our multi-part series of board items involving delegations of authority. Just a brief recap for those unable to attend last month's meeting and a brief reminder for those that were here. Our board governance consultant issued a written report making a number of recommendations on how to improve overall board functionality and to promote efficiency. Several of those related to delegations of authority. So the consultant found that historically, the board has not delegated appropriate authority for program-related approvals and declinations, so that what ends up happening is that an inordinate amount of members' time is spent reviewing individual applications and transactions. The consultant recommended that the board delegate most programmatic transactional approval and rejection decisions to staff so that the board can focus on things like policy, planning, and new programs. To implement this recommendation, we reviewed, updated, indexed, and centralized all existing delegations of authority, which turned out to be a Herculean task involving a ton of people across the EDA. Given the nature and size of this project, we ended up dividing it into bite-sized pieces. At its March meeting, the board approved the delegation of authority policy, which provides that most delegations will be to the CEO, and it permits the CEO to delegate that authority to staff unless the board dictates otherwise. Then, at its April meeting, the board approved increasing the delegated authority thresholds for the New Jersey Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Program. Today, we're recommending that the board approve additional delegated authority. And this is for loan and grant programs, post-closing portfolio management, bond financing, and non-discretionary declinations of individual applications. Many of these delegations involve increases in thresholds for existing delegations of authority. The DEP programs are a good example of this. We're asking the board to increase delegated authority to approve hazardous discharge site remediation fund and petroleum underground storage tank grants up to $1.5 million. The EDA has closed over 18,000, yes, that number is correct, 18,000 PUST grant applications and nearly 2,000 HDSRF grant applications. To date, 675 of those required board approval. And to be clear, the same eligibility and evaluation requirements apply regardless of the funding amount. Moreover, the larger grants do not increase the complexity of the review. The review remains the same. So this is a perfect example of the type of transactional approvals that the consultant recommended be delegated. Other recommendations involve expansions of existing delegations. For example, the board previously approved two pilot programs for qualified community development financial institutions to permit them to expand their ability to provide financing to small businesses in New Jersey. At that time, the board delegated authority to approve individual applications under the Premier CDFI program. We're now asking for delegated authority under the loan-to-lender program. Similarly, we propose to increase delegated authority to improve loan applications up to $500,000 under the PUST program to comport with the existing $500,000 delegation for loan requests under the HDSRF program. Other proposed delegations involve declinations. We're requesting delegated authority to decline applications that do not meet the program's required underwriting criteria or for other non-discretionary reasons. In other words, applications that do not comply with objective board-specified eligibility criteria. So, for example, if a program is intended for small businesses and the board-approved program specifications say that only businesses with fewer than 25 employees are eligible, staff could decline an application from a business with 50 employees instead of bringing that to the board and requiring the board to make that decision. Staff will document the basis for the declination and advise the applicant of the reasons for the decline. Plus, the applicant will have the ability to appeal staff's decision. We're also seeking delegated authority for certain decisions that present no exposure for the authority, do not affect the authority's collateral position, or do not entail any direct financial exposure to the authority. Finally, we propose delegated authority to waive certain fees for good cause or when the cause for the late fee is beyond the control of the borrower. That particular delegation is explicitly authorized by the EBA's rules. I'm happy to answer any questions or go into any details about any particular delegations.
Do we have any questions for Chris?
Hi, this is Rosemarie. I don't know if my comments, I just have a concern about it. I'm not sure if it's this section or the discussion section. And so I'm not really sure at which part of the meeting at this point that I should express that I'm just sort of feeling like it may be a bit much. So I am also in my cafe at the moment, and it's a little crazy, so I don't want to hold anything up in terms of moving this forward. So.
Okay. Other questions for Chris or observations? All right, if there's no more, there's no questions for Chris, can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Dragon, second.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Any discussion? There's no discussion. All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any
recusal? First, Marie, I oppose.
So, okay. We need more. No. Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's go to the next item on our agenda. This is the Fourth Amendment to the Memorandum of Understanding between the New Jersey EDA and the New Jersey Commission on Science, Innovation, and Technology. Fatou Job, Project Officer, presenting. Fatou.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. We're bringing to the board a Fourth Amendment MOU between the authority and the New Jersey Commission on Science, Innovation, and Technology, asking board approval to extend the MOU for 2 years and the option to extend for an additional 2 years upon mutual written consent of the parties. Just to emphasize, no material changes have been made from the third MOU. This is just an extension of the MOU and the EDA-CSIT relationship. Just to give a quick background, the original MOU was executed with CSIT in 2019, and that MOU detailed how the authority was to provide administrative and fiscal management support to the New Jersey Commission on Science, Innovation, and Technology. Since then, we have made 3 amendments to the original MOU. The first amendment allowed for the executive director of the CSIT to be an employee of the authority. The second amendment allowed for other personnel hires of CSIT to also be authority's employees. And the third amendment, which was recently done, revised the reimbursement mechanism by which CSIT will compensate EDA for the programmatic and administrative support that we currently provide to the commission and in launching all of its grant programs. Since then, the authority has supported CSIT in launching all of its current grant programs, and we're also looking to continue that in the relationship to it in future, to its future programs. Giving the successful working relationship between the commission and the New Jersey, between the commission and EDA, both parties have agreed that it would be in the best interest of the state to extend the MOU for two years and also allow for future extensions of an additional 2 years for a total of 4 cumulative years. I'll stop here and happy to take any questions.
Do you have any questions for Fatou? If we have no questions for Fatou, can I get a motion to approve?
Noreen Giblin, move.
Thank you, Noreen. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's move on to economic transformation. New Jersey zero
Mr. Chairman, this is Danielle. I'm curious to answer with and acknowledge that Phil Malazia was present for the last call. I mean, the last vote and voted on that item.
Okay.
Thank you, Danielle.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I've heard about it.
Next item on the agenda, New Jersey Zero Emission Incentive Program, pilot adjustment. Victoria Carey, Clean Energy Manager, Office of Economic Transformation presenting. Victoria.
Good morning. Thank you very much. Today I'm bringing to the board, or we're bringing to the board and recommending the approval of extensions granted to voucher recipients for the New Jersey Zero Emission Incentive Program, also commonly known as NJZIP. As a brief moment of background, NJZIP is a pilot program that is funded by REGI, or the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative funding, that the NJEDA is allocated a portion of annually to support the reduction of emissions in the state of New Jersey, as well as in alignment with NJEDA's mission to support economic development. Our program targets the support and reduction of costs for zero-emission vehicles, which are commercially, industrially or institutionally utilized in the state of New Jersey. Those zero-emission vehicles range anything from something like the size of a catering van up to something along the size of a truck that might go to a local grocery store or a shuttle bus or a jitney that may pick you up while you're along the shore over the summer. These vehicles have been primarily applied for by small businesses within the state of New Jersey for purchase. 90%, more than 90% of our applicants are small businesses, and more than 50% are minority or women-owned businesses. I underline this participation to date in this program because the reason we are coming to the board for an extension is due to the ongoing supply chain crisis caused by the COVID-19 pandemic and exacerbated by ongoing tensions worldwide. This extension would allow, if approved, would allow for vouchers that are already approved for these small businesses to be extended by an additional 6 months to allow time for supply chain difficulties to be resolved or for these longer supply chain difficulties to allow for these vehicles to be delivered. We believe that this would provide us as show us as good stewards of both the REGI funds as well as of our small business communities who are making the leap to be first adopters and primary adopters in their overburdened communities to reduce emissions. We are requesting extensions of these vouchers. However, there are no other changes requested to the program, to the delegations, or to the voucher amounts, simply allowing those who have already been approved for vouchers to have 6 months additional time, granted that they can demonstrate that supply chain difficulties have delayed the receipt of their vehicles by that amount of time. There are no other changes, as I noted, to this program, and I believe that this is an important change to approve in order to maintain our good stewardship of these funds and to support these communities. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Victoria. Do we have any questions for Victoria?
This was a very quick question. I know a couple people that were interested, and they were having some struggles, so I'm glad to see that we're extending it. But is that extension only for vouchers that have already been awarded or folks that are still, or would that include people that are still trying to navigate the system?
It is open. It will be open to all, so a six-month extension to those that have already applied and been approved, allowing for the full 18-month time frame extended for all new applicants.
That's great. Thank you. I think that's a wonderful addition. Thanks.
Other questions? If we have no other questions, can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
I'll second Jenny Bauer. Thank you.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? There's no discussion. All in favor? Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's go to the next item. Is second amendment to contract for contract with the Coalition for Green Capital for Consulting Services. Victoria Carey will continue presenting. Victoria.
Thank you very much. I'm presenting on behalf of my colleague, Alex Hadrian, who's reporting for his reserves duty this week, so we thank him for that. But he was not able to join today, so I'm pleased to present this to the board instead. This memo requests that the board approve a second amendment to an existing contract with the Coalition for Green Capital, CGC, for up to a year and up to $400,000 in order to complete its consulting services to the New Jersey Council on the Green Economy. This extension is on the existing contract, and it will be funded by the authority with an anticipated full reimbursement from the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection, subject to appropriation and available funds. This is not changing any of the overall scope in the First Amendment, only extending the existing contract to complete the work which is supporting the council. As a bit of background, in November of 2020, this board approved a contract with CGC to support the design and implementation of the Green Fund. That contract was for $700,000 for a term of a year and 1 6-month extension with additional month-to-month extensions as necessary. In 2021, the board then approved an amendment to this contract that expanded CGC's role to include supporting the newly established council tasked with developing a blueprint or roadmap to expand the green economy and help build a diverse workforce and support the administration's clean energy and climate goals. These recommendations were expected to align closely with the outputs of the New Jersey Green Fund and as such were approved as an amendment to the work already being performed by CGC. Since this approval of the amendment by the board in 2021, CGC has assisted the council in developing a roadmap, which is quite detailed and follows the agreed scope of work. Through combination with extensive stakeholder engagement, additional research, modeling, engagement with the council members, et cetera, CGC has put forward an initial draft of the roadmap that features a set of 9 strategic opportunities for the state to pursue in the green economy with 71 draft recommendations. CGC and its research partners presented this draft to the council in early March at an in-person meeting. The response of the council to the draft was quite positive, with council members requesting continued work on a few elements of the previously outside of the previously approved scope of work that require some additional funds and time to complete. Given that NJEDA has already executed option 1 of the 6-month extensions for the current contract, which expires on May 31st, a new amendment is required to continue and complete this work started under the existing contract. As such, we are seeking this amendment to extend the current contract to allow for continuity of support of the council work and to complete the work that was outlined in the First Amendment and in this memo that is being presented right now. At that time, any additional consulting work would be transitioned to a new contract based on one or more RFPs that staff would develop based on the needs of the council and the NJEDA once this work is complete. All of the objectives and deliverables in the Second Amendment are in line with the existing scope of work as detailed in the First Amendment. In conclusion, the board is requested to approve a second amendment to the existing contract with CGC for up to 1 year and $400,000 in order to complete its consulting services to the NJ, New Jersey Council on the Green Economy. Any questions?
Questions for Victoria? We have no questions for Victoria. Can I get a motion to approve?
Giblin to approve.
Thank you, Noreen. Can I get a second?
Caridi, second.
Thank you, Marlene. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, the next set of items on our agenda are items covered by our incentives committee. Jenny is chair of incentives. Would you like to say a few words in advance of these items?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Incentive Committee met on May 2nd, and today we have a couple items before the board. One is the Polaro Custom Furniture request to terminate that Grove incentive, and the hearing officer's recommendation on Greener Cleaner Inc. will also be brought forth. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Jenny. And the next item on the agenda, the proposed rule amendments, New Jersey Film and Digital Media Tax Credit. This item has been withheld from consideration at this month's meeting. The next item on the agenda is Polaro Custom Furniture, Grow New Jersey Assistance Program, COVID-related termination, Susan Greitz, Director, Incentives Relationship Management presenting. Susan.
Good morning. So Polaro Custom Furniture is a producer of luxury art furniture. They were approved for a 10-year grow to relocate their operations to Hillside in October of 14. The location was quickly modified in December of that year to a 54,000-square-foot industrial premises. The intention was to hire 20 new and retain 25 full-time employees with an estimated capital investment of $3.7 million and an award of $2.5 million. They certified their project completion in September of 17 with a few less jobs, resulting in an award of $2.2 million. They maintained their required jobs from 17 to 2020 and were issued annual tax credit certificates totaling about $800,000. Since COVID hit, they experienced some changes to their business and have requested a termination of their Grow New Jersey incentive agreement. Just as a reminder, the Economic Recovery Act modified and amended the Grow Law to allow businesses to terminate where they can present a CEO statement and articulate statements that their business has had COVID-related impacts. These kinds of terminations would allow a business to retain previously issued credits without recapture. During the pandemic, Polaro experienced a 75% reduction in order volume, which greatly impacted them and forced them to reduce their jobs to 27 by the end of 2021. They intend to remain in Hillside at their QBF, but are concerned that the minimum job threshold for grows is not something they can consistently retain. So at this time, they'd like to terminate their grow incentive awards, and staff supports their recommendation. Or their request.
Thank you, Susan. Do we have any questions for Susan?
If somebody has a, if they got a GROW award, there's a tax certificate. So, how does that work? Is it just that we're not going to provide a second level of funding, or because we're not asking for anything back?
Yeah, the statute provides sort of a one-time walk-away option for anyone who can demonstrate COVID impact. It sounds like 75% business reduction is a good example of that. Sorry for this company. The statute provides a break provision, Rosemary, where you don't ordinarily you'd have to call, we'd be calling it back if not for COVID. But this provides an option for them to receive no further tax credits because they'd no longer be they'd be out of the program, not even not in compliance, they'd be out of the program, but not claw back the old.
Okay, thanks. Got it.
Any other questions for Susan? If we have no questions for Susan, can I get a motion to approve?
Oh, Roger, approved.
Thank you, Phil. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? No discussion. All in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Thank you, Susan. All right. So the next item on our agenda relates to a hearing officer's recommendation regarding an application declination and the applicant's appeal of same. Prior to the board's vote, pursuant to the authority's public comment policy, a single person speaking on behalf of the applicant appealing the decision will be permitted to speak for a maximum of 3 minutes to the board before the board votes on the appeal. For the next item, the hearing officer will present. The board will then acknowledge one person for the applicant, and we have a representative of the applicant here in the room today, Michael McCann, Principal Garden State Initiatives Group, LLC, who will speak on behalf of Greener Cleaner, Inc. The board serves as the final decision maker. If the applicant is dissatisfied with the board's final administrative decision, it may appeal to the appellate division of the Superior Court of New Jersey pursuant to the rules of the court. The matter is appeal of Greener Cleaner, Inc., a Grow New Jersey incentive award. Nicholas Fauci, legal affairs officer, legal affairs presenting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. This matter is an appeal of staff's determination that Greener Cleaner, Inc. is ineligible for a Grow New Jersey tax credit certificate. Greener Cleaner applied for the Grow New Jersey tax credit on April 26, 2016. Following approval, Greener Cleaner timely submitted its certification of project completion, and staff rejected approximately $1,322,477 of the capital investment expenses that Greener Cleaner attempted to certify, including $50,000 for equipment at businesses purchased businesses and $1,050,000 for acquisition costs for the QBF located in Camden. EDA rejected the expenses certified for equipment at purchased businesses on the basis that the bill of sale Greener Cleaner provided in support of these costs was defective, notably because the bill of sale was not executed, no evidence of payment thereon was provided, and there was no indication description as to what the equipment was nor where it was located. And currently, EDA staff projected the expenses certified for the QBF acquisition because the program's enabling statute provides that site acquisition must occur within 24 months of an applicant's Grow New Jersey application for these expenses to be considered an eligible capital investment. As I said earlier, Greener Cleaner applied on April 26, 2016, while the deed transferring title to the QBF was not executed until June 18, 2018, which is approximately 26 months following the date of application. On appeal, Greener Cleaner argues EDA staff erred in finding these expenses were not an eligible capital investment. As to the rejection of the $50,000, Greener Cleaner provided a purported executed bill of sale as well as a copy of a check from its attorney's trust account as proof of payment for these costs. Regarding the QBF acquisition issue, Greener Cleaner contends acquisition of the QBF was delayed because of a change in ownership requiring the completion of a separation agreement prior to moving forward with the purchase of the QBF. Secondly, Greener Cleaner asserts it paid a fee to extend the deadline to acquire the QBF. And finally, it argues that because the EDA accepted its two applications to extend the project completion deadline, the date of application for these extensions should control as to when the 24-month period begins. Both of these arguments are not convincing. As to the $50,000 of expenses rejected, the documentation that it provided on appeal is still deficient. The purportedly executed bill of sale was only executed by the seller of the equipment, and the documentation fails to identify where it was located or at least indicate that it was intended to be used at the QBF. The check provided as purported proof of payment is also deficient, as it is impossible to determine whether it was cashed. Only a copy of the front of the check was provided. Similarly, Greener Cleaner has failed to show that the QBF acquisition expenses are an eligible capital investment. The Grow New Jersey Program's enabling statute does not provide the authority with any latitude to modify the strict 24-month requirement for QBF site acquisition to be considered an eligible capital investment. Secondly, this Grow Program statute and rules do not permit an applicant to pay a fee to extend the QBF acquisition deadline. The extension fee Greener Cleaner refers to was paid to extend the deadline for it to submit its application to the authority with respect to the program's capital investment and employment requirements, which is separate from the issue at hand. And finally, contrary to Greener Cleaner's contentions, the fact that it applied for and was subsequently approved for certification extensions does not modify the date of the company's program application to the date of application for the second certification expenses. Thank you, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Nicholas.
Let's
do that. So the board will acknowledge Michael McCann, Principal Garden State Initiatives Group, LLC, will speak on behalf of Greener Cleaner. And Michael, if I can remind you, you have 3 minutes to address the board, and then we'll have an opportunity for
board members' questions of both Nicholas and Michael, if there are those questions.
Did you do anything with the microphone?
No. Yeah.
Thank you for the board for hearing me. Thank you, Nick. By the way, Nick has been very, well, we disagree, he's been very good as far as corresponding back and forth. So Nick provided a good summary. I'll give you a better summary. The owner, Paul Kang, my client, Greener Cleaner, came here from South Korea, very little money, through hard work, education, built a laundry business, commercial and industrial laundry business, that in 2015 and 2016, they were deciding where were they going to expand this business. While Pennsylvania, Maine were sent because that's where their routes are and cheaper business, specifically because of the GROW program, Mr. Kang moved his business into Camden, purchased the facility, purchased the equipment, did everything he was supposed to, submitted the information in the summer of 2020, as Nick said, only to be declined for the reasons that he's saying. So I'm here to ask the board to essentially reject their recommendation, send it back to them, and say, you know, we want you to work with these guys to help them, you know, qualify, because they did the right thing. This is the type of project why you guys created this program. A third of his employees are Camden residents. I mean, he did everything right because of a technicality and a disagreement on interpretation of the statute. But let me start with this real quick, because I only have 3 minutes. Okay, this is the incentive agreement that you guys signed and executed. It's executed by Arlene M. Clark, I don't know the copy if you need it, on February 26, 2020. Appendix B, so this is February of 2020, specifically states that the deed that you guys are agreeing to is June 18th of 2018. So you knew that this was the date of the deed and agreed to this incentive agreement. In addition to further evidence that we were all in agreement, you guys accepted and cashed our check for $20,900, agreeing to the terms that are in that incentive agreement in February. This is, you know, deposited to NGEDA Economic Recovery Fund. So I'm not a lawyer like Nick, but a deal is a deal. We have a deal signed here with this information in the incentive agreement, only to have you guys come back 6 months later and say, nope, sorry, we didn't misrepresent anything in here. This is a signed agreement. So I know there's the 24-month rule that Nick is referencing in EDA staff. So I've sent several interpretations to, and excuse me for my nervousness, but that I believe could be reasonably interpreted to allow that to occur, the expenses to occur within 24 months. I won't go over them because he has them. But what I did point out to him was, you guys had the situation with Webamax a few months back where the staff very clearly said to them over and over again that they were in default because they left their QBF and the statute says this and you must pay back your money. However, I'm reading from your minutes. Staff then paused the termination process and the clawbacks of the relief upon request by the board. And because the termination provision is prospective, EDA staff had initially developed their policy that they couldn't help Webamax. I'm summarizing here. However, they then determined that they would allow commercially reasonable responses to COVID-19-related impacts. The point I'm making here is, you guys knew that was not the right, that was not the right thing to do to penalize that business. So you asked them to go back and look and say, guys, can we help these guys? And they took another look in interpretation of the statute and said, yes, we can. If we interpret it this way, they now will no longer have to pay that fine and they will be able to stay in business. In my client's case, he's counting on these tax credits. He did everything right. There are ways to look. It's not defined so specifically that you can't look at that 24-month language and take a couple of interpretations as we have suggested a few and reverse this. So I'm asking the board to reverse this, send it back to the staff, and at least have them look at it again and say, look, we have a contract with these guys. We agreed to this deed date in our agreement. We knew this. We accepted their money. How can we help these guys? So that's my request to the board.
Thank you, Mike. Do any members have questions for Nicholas or Michael? Nicholas, I have one question.
Yes.
Just you obviously have had a number of discussions with Michael about the agreement that he's referencing and deed dates and accepting a check for $20,000. What is, when you examine that, what are your observations from that
that signed agreement.
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Yes. Michael mentioned that there is in an agreement that the EDA executed, that there was a deed date mentioned of June of 2018. And we signed that agreement and also accepted a $20,000 in change application fee or whatever the fee is called. I'm just curious, when you examine that, what are your observations?
My observation was that the statute is clear that in order for the QBF acquisition expenses to be considered an eligible capital investment, the purchase must have been made within 24 months. And upon review of the statute of regulations, I did not find anywhere that would give staff latitude to adjust that date.
Okay. Thank you, Nicholas.
Thank you.
So, guys, I'll just offer the fee question, I think, is a fair. We'll explore some options whether we can have some discretion on whether the fee probably should have been collected or not. I think that's germane to the appeal. It's relevant, but not germane to the decision or not. Happy to take a look at that. The advice I give to our team when we have tricky situations like this is that we kind of have to live within a triangle that has three points: what's in the statute, what's in our and regs, what's in our agreement, and what would a commercially reasonable person do with the set of facts. In this case, the statute is unfortunately black and white, crystal clear. I wish that wasn't the case. I don't disagree with the assertion that the company did the right, did as many of the right things as possible, but it was outside the bounds of what's in the statute. And I think, unfortunately, therefore, our discretion is limited, if any. And so that's, we've had some experience getting feedback about being faithful to statutes and regs. And this is,
right,
unfortunately, where that comes home to roost.
Any other questions or observations?
Tim, this is Jenny. I just want to reiterate what I believe I understood you said, which is you really don't have any latitude with this at all because of the regulations.
It's super to the regulations. It's the statute, unfortunately.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions or observations? All right. Can I get a motion to approve?
I'm sorry. Is the motion to approve that it stands or a motion to approve for the applicant?
Motion to, is it declining the
appeal? To accept the next recommendation that we
decline
the appeal. Can I get a motion to approve?
Noreen Giblin, so moved.
Thank you, Noreen. Can I get a second?
Fred Dumont.
Jenny Bauer. Yeah, I'll second.
Thank you, Fred. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Next item on the agenda will be covering Director's Loan Review Committee. Marcia Marley, our chair, would you like to make a few comments ahead of items under your review?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. The Director's Loan Review Committee met on March 31st. When we reviewed and discussed the recommended delegations of authority, which have already been presented and approved at this meeting, as well as several bond project requests, the bond-related matters include the adoption of written post-insurance compliance procedures with respect to the authority's municipal rehabilitation refunding bonds, amendment to the insurance clause sections of the sublease for the state house project to align requirements with the state's current insurance program, and the approval of a standalone bond for $7 million for the Atlantic City Sewage Company. These requests will now be presented to the full board. Chairman, I turn the meeting back over to you.
Thank you, Marcia. So the first item here is the State House Renovation Lease Revenue Bonds Tax-Exempt Series B Modification. Juan Burgos, Director, Development and Finance, Real Estate, presenting. Juan.
Good morning, everyone.
We are requesting that the members approve amending the sublease between the authority and the Joint Management Commission for the renovation of the State House to align the sublease insurance requirements with the state's current insurance program. In May 2017, the members approved a $375 million lease sublease bond transaction between the authority and the Joint Management Commission, which included two series of bonds, $300 million, which was for the renovation of the State House, and a $75 million series to refund the prior bonds and to pay the cost of issuance. The transaction included two leases, the lease from the Joint Management Commission to the authority, and then the lease from the authority to the Joint Management Commission, the sublease. The sublease authorized the renovation, the repayment of the bonds, and included the required insurance for the duration of the sublease. In 2021, when filing the annual insurance certification, the state's Division of Risk Management advised the authority that the state's insurance program was revised and no longer provided the coverage required in the sublease. The chart on the page two of the memo summarizes the types of insurances required in the initial sublease and then the current state's program. The sublease amendment is required to update the sublease insurance requirements of the state's current insurance program. Are there any questions?
Are there any questions for Juan? We have no questions for Juan. Can I get a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Jenny Bauer, yes. I'll move.
Thank you, Marcia. Jenny, can that be a second?
You certainly, Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item on the agenda was a standalone bond for the Atlantic City Sewerage Company. This item has been withheld from consideration from today's meeting. Moving to the next item on the agenda, adoption of written post-issuance compliance procedures with respect to the authority's municipal rehabilitation refunding bonds, 2019 Series A. Dan White, Managing Director, Post-Closing Financial Services, presenting. Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is an administrative request to adopt written post-closing compliance procedures with respect to the 2019 Series A tax-exempt $43.3 million NJEBA Municipal Rehab Rehabilitation Refunding Bond issue. The request also asks to approve the use of professionals and to authorize authority staff to take all necessary actions incidental to the request. The request is made in coordination with and directly from the New Jersey State Treasurer and the Attorney General's Office and has been reviewed by Bond Counsel Eckerd Seaman. As required by IRS requirements and in accordance with the tax certificate for the bond, the authority has been undertaking the arbitrage rebate requirements with respect to the bonds. The authority now wishes to memorialize these ongoing compliance procedures as described in the memo attachment. The authority, in consultation with bond counsel, will supplement and update these procedures as appropriate to provide continuing sources of guidance on these requirements. I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right. Do we have any questions for Dan? We have no questions for Dan. Can I get a motion to approve?
Giblin, so moved.
Thank you, Noreen. Can I get a second?
Dragon.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Next item here is a single voting item, but a couple different projects for the Hazardous Discharge Site Remediation Fund. Michael Dealey, DEP Manager, Underwriting, presenting. Michael.
Thank you. Good morning. Under DEP's Hazardous Discharge Site Remediation Fund program, we have two municipal supplemental grant applications from the City of Perth Amboy in the amounts of $201,295.60 and $1,112,815.13. This is at a project site called Second Street Park. Prior approvals to the city for the specific project total, approximately $2.6 million. The proceeds of the first request in the amount of $201,295.60 will be used to fund investigation activities at the project site. The proceeds of the second request in the amount of $1,112,815.13 will be used to fund costs associated with the ongoing remedial action at the project site. It's the applicant's intent upon the completion of full site remediation to redevelop the property for recreational use in the form of a public waterfront park. Thank you.
Great. Have any questions for Michael?
Banner day for cost estimating. We're down to 13 cents on what it's going to cost to remediate. Some cost estimator somewhere.
Oh.
Have a great day.
It's good work.
Yeah.
Do we have any questions for Michael? If no questions for Michael, can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Fred Dumont, second.
Thank you, Brett. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
Any recusals, abstentions? Great. Thank you. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
We have one item under real estate here. Charles Sarlo, our chair of the real estate committee. Charles, would you like to share a few words?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good evening. Good morning, board members. The Real Estate Committee did meet, and we did discuss this one matter before you. I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised when you hear staff present the details of it, but in essence, it is the authorization of the board to select Atlantic Realty Development, as recommended by the staff, as the most qualified respondent to an RFP in connection with the purchase of a property that is owned by the EDA in North Brunswick. And I said the terms are very favorable as viewed by the Real Estate Committee, and we think the board is going to agree. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll turn it back to you.
Great. Thank you, Charles. So this is regarding the sale of property located at Block 252, lots 1.06 and 1.03 North Brunswick, Middlesex County. Juan Burgos, Director, Development and Finance, Real Estate presenting. Juan.
Hello. Staff requests that the members approve the following. Atlantic Realty Development Company as the most qualified respondent to the RFP to purchase or ground lease Block 252, lots 106 and 103 in North Brunswick, New Jersey. The purchase price of $13.1 million, the negotiation and execution of the agreement of sale and the related promissory note, and the execution of any and all other documents necessary to effectuate the transaction. As background, in 2003, the authority purchased the property consisting of 25 acres in two lots on the northern side of Route 1, which is directly across from the New Jersey Bioscience Center. The property was purchased with the intention of expanding the Bioscience Center, but at this time, the authority desires to sell the property for redevelopment purposes and issued the RFP. In December 2021, staff issued the RFP to accept offers to purchase or ground lease the property. The evaluation criteria included the proposed uses do not require a use variance, the estimated number of bulk variance for the proposed use, the total number of business days until the initial closing, and the estimated number of full-time permanent jobs on the property. Atlantic Realty received the highest average score and also submitted the highest offer of $13.1 million. So, in sum, the staff requests that the members approve the four items, which include Atlantic Realty Development as the most qualified respondent to the RFP to purchase the property, the purchase price of $13.1 million, the negotiation and execution of the agreement of sale and the promissory note, and execution of any and all other documents necessary to effectuate the transaction. Are there any questions?
Questions for Juan? If we have no questions for Juan, can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Caridi seconds.
Marlene, any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item on the agenda, board memoranda. Tim Sullivan, CEO, presenting. Tim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief. You have four memos in your pack that you received. Three of them are related to post-closing portfolio management, delegated authority approvals, and then there's a memo related to economic products, delegated authority. Two things I would just highlight briefly. The angel investor tax credit continues to be a real engine of investment and attracting early-stage companies to come to and stay in New Jersey and grow and prosper. Another nearly $8 million in tax credits authorized under that program, representing more than $40 million of private investment in New Jersey startups, which is great. Another flag I'd make is the Small Business Assistance, Emergency Assistance Loan Program that was funded by USEDA money. An additional $3 million of funding was approved for small businesses for dealing with COVID through that program. So continued progress on lots of fronts. Happy to take any questions on those memos.
Any questions for Tim? If we have no questions for Tim, I'd like to open the public comment portion of the meeting. First, I'd like to ask Danielle Esser to read the NJEDA's public comment policy and process for this telephonic board meeting. Mostly telephonic, I would call it.
Exactly.
Danielle?
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As stated in NJEDA's public comment policy, members of the public who wish to speak during the public comment portion of the meeting in person and who have registered to speak at the form provided at the door will be acknowledged to speak first during the public comment portion of the meeting. Members of the public attending the meeting by phone who are interested in providing public comment can press 1, then 0 on their telephone keypad to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue based on the order received. We'll go over NJEDA's public comment policy at this time, which is also available on the NJEDA website. Each speaker will be prompted to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization affiliation, and the topic on which remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit comments to matters pertaining to the authority. Staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired. The speaker may not register to speak more than once during the same public comment period to ensure there's enough time available for all of those who wish to speak. And speakers may provide related documents, printed comments, or materials attached to an email. We look forward to receiving your public comments at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Danielle. So, operator, we're ready to acknowledge any members of the public who have who are prepared to speak.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, for members of the public on the phone, if you wish to ask a question, please press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating that 1-0 command. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, you may press 1, then 0 at this time. One moment, please, for our first question. And that first question will come from the line of Christopher Amigals. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Chris Amigals of the New Jersey Business Industry Association. I just wanted to say two items of thanks. So number one on your agenda, child care. BIA has been extremely supportive of the child care industry as a backbone of all industry and workforce development. I'm sure all of you, everybody, is very attuned to the workforce crisis that's going on right now, and the EDA has done some good work that with that, and the work you're doing on child care will help address the workforce crisis, and it's the reason why we're supporting a lot of the initiatives of the Murphy administration, EDA, legislature, and so can't do enough on child care, so thank you very much for this new pilot program. Number two, wanted to just thank you guys for participating and supporting the manufacturing industry. Director Sullivan and many EDA staff were present for the manufacturing state of the state last week, and we thank you for that. And thank you for always focusing on the needs of manufacturers in the state. We know it's a vital industry to the state, and they have their challenges, but I know the Murphy administration and EDA have done some good work to help them, and we look forward to continuing to work with that towards that. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Good to see you last week.
Good to see you.
Thank you. If there are any additional questions, please press 10 at this time. And there are no additional questions or comments in queue at this time.
Great. Thank you, operator. If there are no additional comments, I'd like to thank everybody for their participation. Now make a motion to adjourn the meeting. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. Thank you, everyone. This concludes our meeting. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T conferencing service. You may now disconnect.
Exactly.